Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Poziom rozszerzony. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie teksty do zadań od pierwszego do trzeciego. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz dźwięk. W nagraniu przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z poleceniami oraz treścią zadań sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania w trakcie słuchania nagrań oraz w czasie przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie pierwsze. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
One.
A crowded flight was cancelled and a single attendant was rebooking a long line of travellers. Suddenly, an angry passenger pushed his way to the desk and shouted, "I have to be on this flight and it has to be first class." The attendant replied, "I'm sorry, sir. I'll be happy to help you, but I've got to serve these people first." The passenger was unimpressed. He asked loudly so that the passengers behind him could hear, "Do you have any idea who I am?" Without hesitating, the gate attendant smiled and grabbed her microphone. "May I have your attention, please?" she announced. "We have a passenger here at the gate who does not know who he is. If anyone can help him find his identity, please come to the gate."
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
1.
A crowded flight was cancelled and a single attendant was rebooking a long line of travellers. Suddenly, an angry passenger pushed his way to the desk and shouted, "I have to be on this flight and it has to be first class." The attendant replied, "I'm sorry, sir. I'll be happy to help you, but I've got to serve these people first." The passenger was unimpressed. He asked loudly so that the passengers behind him could hear, "Do you have any idea who I am?" Without hesitating, the gate attendant smiled and grabbed her microphone. "May I have your attention, please?" she announced. "We have a passenger here at the gate who does not know who he is. If anyone can help him find his identity, please come to the gate."
Two. Whether you have a small parcel or hundreds of kilos of belongings to send, we can handle it for you. With the most comprehensive range of carriers here at Mailboxes, we can find the best price and carrier for your needs. Even if you have a house full of things, we'll find the most effective way to ship them. We also offer a packaging service, so if you have a tough packaging job, a bike for example, we'll handle all the details, from padding to taping and labelling. And if you live in the Cambridge area, we will come and pick up your boxes free of charge.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
2. Whether you have a small parcel or hundreds of kilos of belongings to send, we can handle it for you. With the most comprehensive range of carriers here at Mailboxes, we can find the best price and carrier for your needs. Even if you have a house full of things, we'll find the most effective way to ship them. We also offer a packaging service, so if you have a tough packaging job, a bike, for example, we'll handle all the details, from padding to taping and labeling. And if you live in the Cambridge area, we will come and pick up your boxes free of charge. Three.
We're here today to talk about refugees, millions of them, people who often don't even realise that a day like this exists. Numbers can illuminate, but they can also obscure. So I'm here today to say that refugees are not numbers. They are all survivors, each one with a remarkable story that tells of resilience in the face of great loss. The refugees I have met have profoundly changed my life. An 8-year-old girl who saved her brother taught me to be brave. A pregnant woman in Pakistan taught me what it is to be a mother. And a paralyzed boy showed me the strength of an unbreakable spirit. So today, on World Refugee Day, I thank them for letting me into their lives.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
3.
We're here today to talk about refugees, millions of them, people who often don't even realize that a day like this exists. Numbers can illuminate, but they can also obscure. So I'm here today to say that refugees are not numbers. They are all survivors, each one with a remarkable story that tells of resilience in the face of great loss. The refugees I have met have profoundly changed my life. An 8-year-old girl who saved her brother taught me to be brave. A pregnant woman in Pakistan taught me what it is to be a mother. And a paralyzed boy showed me the strength of an unbreakable spirit. So today, on World Refugee Day, I thank them for letting me into their lives.
Zadanie drugie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
If you've chosen to study away from home, one accommodation option is living in a hall of residence. Listen to four students talking about their experience of on-campus life. 1.
Life in halls of residence is unlike anything else I've ever experienced. I don't see how anyone can make friends in college without living there for at least 1 year. And it's not true that halls are not for introverts. I'm a shy person myself, and I share a room with an extremely outgoing Londoner. Yet we get on really well. The only problem is that we no longer have Mum and Dad here to wake us up or cook for us. We just have to grow up and cope with our problems on our own.
For the facilities, location and food services, on-campus life is unbeatable. With classmates and friends around 24 hours a day, you can always find someone to study or take a study break with. Living here, I've formed friendships that I know will last a lifetime. Halls are also convenient when you need a hand. If your computer crashes, you can head to the computer freak next door. If you run out of paper, your roommate will surely give you a stack of sheets. Most halls of residence are as big as cities, and yet as warm as a home.
What I like about living on campus is that everything you need, sports facilities, library, canteen, classes, is right here in the halls or nearby. Also, after a long night of studying, I don't have to wake up at 6:30 the next morning to get to class for 8:30 a.m. Instead, I can sleep till 7:45. What I miss, though, is my own space. I'm a studious person and I could do without all-night parties and crowds of visitors. Having roommates around all the time and queuing to take a shower drives me crazy much more than I thought it would. But who knows, you might create lifelong bonds in that queue.
During their first year of college, students should definitely try living in a hall of residence. For me, it is mainly a social experience. You learn to get on with other people, both those living with you and living around you. But there are many rules to obey, so for many young people, it might be too restrictive. Renting a flat on your own obviously gives you more freedom. So if you are a free spirit, uncomfortable with curfews, closed-circuit TV, and people watching your conduct, and you can afford it, go for that option.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
If you've chosen to study away from home, one accommodation option is living in a hall of residence. Listen to four students talking about their experience of on-campus life. 1.
Life in halls of residence is unlike anything else I've ever experienced. I don't see how anyone can make friends in college without living there for at least 1 year. And it's not true that halls are not for introverts. I'm a shy person myself, and I share a room with an extremely outgoing Londoner. Yet we get on really well. The only problem is that we no longer have Mum and Dad here to wake us up or cook for us. We just have to grow up and cope with our problems on our own.
Two. For the facilities, location and food services, on-campus life is unbeatable. With classmates and friends around 24 hours a day, you can always find someone to study or take a study break with. Living here, I've formed friendships that I know will last a lifetime. Halls are also convenient when you need a hand. If your computer crashes, you can head to the computer freak next door. If you run out of paper, your roommate will surely give you a stack of sheets. Most halls of residence are as big as cities, and yet as warm as a home. Three.
What I like about living on campus is that everything you need, sports facilities, library, canteen, classes, is right here in the halls or nearby. Also, after a long night of studying, I don't have to wake up at 6:30 the next morning to get to class for 8:30 a.m. Instead, I can sleep till 7:45. What I miss, though, is my own space. I'm a studious person and I could do without all-night parties and crowds of visitors. Having roommates around all the time and queuing to take a shower drives me crazy much more than I thought it would. But who knows, you might create lifelong bonds in that queue.
Four. During their first year of college, students should definitely try living in a hall of residence. For me, it is mainly a social experience. You learn to get on with other people, both those living with you and living around you. But there are many rules to obey, so for many young people, it might be too restrictive. Renting a flat on your own obviously gives you more freedom. So if you are a free spirit, uncomfortable with curfews, closed-circuit TV, and people watching your conduct, and you can afford it, go for that option.
Zadanie trzecie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Judith Fain, an award-winning travel journalist and photographer, is in the studio today. Judith, how did your career start? Did you work for magazines and newspapers from the very beginning?
Not really. I used to be a Hollywood screenwriter. The problem was I couldn't write what I wanted to, but only what the producer was willing to pay for. After 12 years, I realised I couldn't stand that anymore. Then one day, my sister called me and said they were starting a new travel show on national radio and that I could submit something. Fortunately, we had a recording studio in our house, and my husband helped me record a piece about people going to a monastery on a silent retreat. A week later, the producer called me and asked me to do another piece for them. Of course, I agreed. From there, I moved into travel writing for magazines and newspapers.
So which is better for somebody considering a career like yours? Writing for the printed press or online magazines?
Online doesn't pay much, but it's good to get clips and exposure, and it's relatively easier to get published there than in traditional magazines and newspapers, especially that they're all cutting back. The best you can get starting in the business is to write short pieces for different publishers, usually as a freelancer, so forget about a long-term contract and stability.
And moving on to your own experience, how much research is involved in travel writing?
That depends on the person. I research very little before I travel, but on the road, I'm a sponge, soaking up everything I can. Using outdated materials is a crime for a travel writer, so I pick up info sheets everywhere I go. When I get home, I refer to this info, check with experts and use the net.
And is note-taking useful?
Of course. 2 years from now, if you find an outlet for an article, you can refer back to your notes to get the first draft quickly. But to record factual information like opening hours or information panels at sites and museums, I prefer to use a digital camera. It's just quicker than rewriting them. I stick to note-taking when I want to record more abstract, peculiar things, for instance, what a place smells like, how I feel there, things photos can't really show.
And in what way has the new media, especially the internet, reshaped the role of guidebooks and travel magazines?
I think many traditional publishers are evolving to keep pace with the new media. Reliable information is key. Many online sites offer up-to-date tips about destinations from locals living within those destinations. I'm sure the websites will follow the current craze for networking and encourage people to contribute even more than today. Two obvious options are linking your blog to a publisher's website or sharing your travel photos there. As for traditional guidebooks, I can envisage publishers recycling existing print titles into applications and e-books. I remain sceptical, however, that they will ever totally replace traditional guidebooks. I think that people still enjoy reading from paper, and personally, I would still rather take a guidebook with me than scroll around online for information while out and about.
Well, Judith, thanks for coming to the studio today.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Judith Fain, an award-winning travel journalist and photographer, is in the studio today. Judith, how did your career start? Did you work for magazines and newspapers from the very beginning?
Not really. I used to be a Hollywood screenwriter. The problem was I couldn't write what I wanted to, but only what the producer was willing to pay for. After 12 years, I realised I couldn't stand that anymore. Then one day, my sister called me and said they were starting a new travel show on national radio and that I could submit something. Fortunately, we had a recording studio in our house, and my husband helped me record a piece about people going to a monastery on a silent retreat. A week later, the producer called me and asked me to do another piece for them. Of course, I agreed. From there, I moved into travel writing for magazines and newspapers.
So which is better for somebody considering a career like yours? Writing for the printed press or online magazines?
Online doesn't pay much, but it's good to get clips and exposure, and it's relatively easier to get published there than in traditional magazines and newspapers, especially that they're all cutting back. The best you can get starting in the business is to write short pieces for different publishers, usually as a freelancer, so forget about a long-term contract and stability.
And moving on to your own experience, how much research is involved in travel writing?
That depends on the person. I research very little before I travel, but on the road, I'm a sponge, soaking up everything I can. Using outdated materials is a crime for a travel writer, so I pick up info sheets everywhere I go. When I get home, I refer to this info, check with experts and use the net.
And is note-taking useful?
Of course. 2 years from now, if you find an outlet for an article, you can refer back to your notes to get the first draft quickly. But to record factual information like opening hours or information panels at sites and museums, I prefer to use a digital camera. It's just quicker than rewriting them. I stick to note-taking when I want to record more abstract, peculiar things, for instance, what a place smells like, how I feel there, things photos can't really show.
And in what way has the new media, especially the internet, reshaped the role of guidebooks and travel magazines?
I think many traditional publishers are evolving to keep pace with the new media. Reliable information is key. Many online sites offer up-to-date tips about destinations from locals living within those destinations. I'm sure the websites will follow the current craze for networking and encourage people to contribute even more than today. Two obvious options are linking your blog to a publisher's website or sharing your travel photos there. As for traditional guidebooks, I can envisage publishers recycling existing print titles into applications and e-books. I remain sceptical, however, that they will ever totally replace traditional guidebooks. I think that people still enjoy reading from paper, and personally, I would still rather take a guidebook with me than scroll around online for information while out and about.
Well, Judith, thanks for coming to the studio today.
Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął.